What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival. So join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
Hey pod people, Engineer Adam here, jumping in for a quick second to let you know about the brand new all-in-one platform for all of you creative podcasters out there. Anchor makes it easier than ever to make a podcast. It's free to use and has all the creation tools you need to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Plus, Anchor will get your podcast set up on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Even better, Anchor helps you connect with sponsors, even if you're just starting out. It's the perfect choice for podcasters, so make sure to check it out. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. Back to the show.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Pod people, Leo Phillips here with This Must Be The Gig, your little backstage pass to the world of live music. Every single week we bring you fascinating conversations from the beating heart of the performance scene with some of the most exciting names on this gigantic, big, spongy globe. We talk about passion, we talk first concerts, last concerts, and everything in the Juicy Center. This week we're sharing a really special live recording of our conversation with Open Mic Eagle, the latest in our series of events from StubHub's flagship event space in New York City. But before we dig into that really thrilling and hysterical conversation, I think we should check in with our constant companion here at TMBTG Studios, Engineer Adam. I missed you last week.
I know. It was sad not to be able to be there in person, but, you know, I'm still on the ones and twos in the editing studio.
The ones and twos.
I'm really excited to let you know that we got so much good feedback for
we did?
Our quiz last week. We're
what did
bringing
people
it
say?
Around back. They all wanted
what are they
to.
Saying?
They were playing along. They were all impressed by how well you did. Six out of six.
I mean,
that's, you know.
Hair flip.
I'm sad to say, though, nobody tried to top our suggestion of a name of Les Quizarobbles.
Oh, why did nobody gave us
nobody,
a suggestion?
Nobody took us seriously.
Wait, nobody gave us a suggestion?
Nobody,
better?
Nobody, because nobody took us seriously that we want them to top us. Give us a suggested name for this quiz segment, and you will have it on the show, and we'll give you a shout-out.
That sounds like a threat.
It is a threat. You have to do it.
What's wrong with Les Miserables? Les Quizarobbles? What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Great.
I just think it could be topped.
I mean, that's honest. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But also, this might be our first fight.
Oh, no.
I love Les Quizarobbles.
All right. Well, that's it. Les Quizarobbles.
There you go.
There it is.
So what do you have in store? I feel like you're going to do it again. Is it a weekly thing now?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, shit balls.
So this week,
okay,
the quiz focuses on musician memoirs.
Oh, I just read one. Okay. You
so
probably put that one in.
We'll see.
Okay. Oh, shit.
So I'm going to give you the name.
Okay.
Of a memoir.
Oh, God.
And you've got to tell me who wrote it.
But is it easy enough if I haven't read all of the memoirs and all of the histories? Is
I
it
think
easy
so.
Enough?
Okay. I think it should be good. So the first one I know you've read, so it's...
Okay.
Acid for the Children.
Oh, I just read that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Flea.
Yeah, there you go.
I got to watch that live. Well, no, I didn't get to watch that live. I got to watch Flea on his book tour at Music Box in Chicago a few weeks ago. And the ticket included a signed copy of his book.
Amazing.
Which I was really thrilled about because that kind of thing I don't get too often because of where I used to live.
Right.
You know, people don't just come pop in for a book tour. And so I was really excited. I felt kind of VIP, although me and 500 other people were VIPs. But then when I got home, I opened the book and it was just a hotel note that he had written on and signed, stuffed into the book. Okay, I got the first one right.
The next one is kiss and make up. Think about it. Kiss and make up.
I feel like this. Wait, kiss and make up. Oh, kiss
it's
and make
pun.
Up. I was gonna say Drake.
No.
From Kiss.
Yes.
He's that man with the really gross snake tongue. Gene Simmons.
Yeah, there
is that
you go.
Right?
That's it. The next
I'm
one.
I'm so good at. No, I'm not good at this.
The next one is Who I Am.
Is that a lyric as well?
Who I Am.
Who I Am. Pete Townsend.
Yeah,
is
there
it
you
from
go.
Woohoo!
The next one is Waging Heavy Peace. This one's a little tougher. It's not as obvious in the title.
Waging Heavy Peace. What year was it written? What year did it come out?
I don't have the year
written
down.
What's the genre?
Folk rock.
Waging Heavy
70s
Peace.
Guy. Well, continues on today, but
okay,
known...
pass. No, tell me the answer.
Neil Young.
Oh, fuck. I could have got... What's a Neil Young reference? Oh, Ford must... No, what... oh, Ford... Oh, Ford. No, what car does he drive? He drives a really old car. Have you not seen pictures?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, I should show you pictures
of that. Yeah, please
do. If anybody knows about Neil Young's car,
let us
know. Call in.
The next one is Just Kids.
Patty.
Yes.
I've read that. Wonderful.
And our last one.
Wait, which one didn't I get? Because I want to put that on my list.
You did not get the Neil Young one.
Shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, Neil.
There's one last one. This is the sixth and final question. Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl.
I think you've just looked on my bookshelf.
No, I haven't.
And seen.
So?
Carrie.
Yeah.
I know that one.
You knew that one.
Yeah.
So five
Carrie
for
Brownstein,
six. Five for six. Not bad.
Really not bad. Especially since you don't tell me when these things are coming up. Les Miserables is a freaking...
Runaway train.
Who am I? Who?
Next up, we have our favorite feature here at TMBTG Studios. It is the live show of the week.
Who have we chosen this week?
Each week, we highlight one of the most heart-thumping events we could find out there, and we share it with our listeners so that they can go out and buy some tickets and enjoy the show.
It is also one of those moments where we decide on the ones that we can't get to that we wish we could go to.
That sometimes is the case. Yeah, absolutely.
We wish we could teleport to many of these.
In this case, we have two shows, the first of which we very much can and, in fact, are going to.
Oh, okay. Which one? We've got a few
first,
coming up.
We're highlighting a series of performances from Wilco at the Chicago Theater here in the Windy City. That's between the 15th and 19th of December. So on Sunday and Monday, they'll be joined by Robin Hitchcock, the legendary Robin Hitchcock. And then on Wednesday and Thursday, the 18th and 19th, they'll be joined by one of our absolute favorites, Sharon Van Etten.
And I know that Engineer Adam and I will be at the Wednesday night show if you want to not say hello because you probably don't know what we look like. Also, Adam is 6'7". So
in case you couldn't hear it from my voice.
Get pissed off from
someone being
tall
and blocking
man,
your view.
It's Adam.
Yeah.
Even if you ask him his name and he says George, just know it's Adam.
Yeah, I lie.
Yeah.
I'm a liar. But of course.
Who are you? Who?
George. But of course, we had to shout out the performance by the one and only Mariah Carey as well. It's going to be at Madison.
Oh, is that why you shouted
exactly
it out?
Exactly so. Madison Square Garden, Sunday, December 15th. It's the holiday season, so how could we not mention Mariah?
I also want to say, I don't know her.
Hey, yeah. If you want to get on the excitement of those shows or any show, you can always head over to StubHub via cosradio.lv/StubHub. That's cosradio.lv/StubHub to find the best selection of tickets to all of the hottest shows. That's cosradio.lv/StubHub. And while we're talking about important things to do while on the internet, let's talk about how you absolutely need to go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review. Make it 5 stars. Let us know what
you think. Throw it at us. Throw them. Throw those stars. You have so many.
If you want your personalized end-of-year album recommendation as well, we're still offering that. All you have to do is leave that 5-star review and then email us at thismustbethegig@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Tell us what your favorite snack is and what your review was, and we will send you a personalized album recommendation.
Also, if you'd like to just say hello and talk about what show you went to, you are more than welcome to. But let us focus on this week's interview, considering it is one of my favorites of all time. It is also our 80th episode.
80 episodes. Baby.
As I mentioned earlier, we are thrilled to share the latest of live conversations from StubHub's flagship New York office at 39th and Broadway, where we were joined by Open Mike Eagle. Mike and I chat about his most recent LP, the masterful Brick Body Kids Still Daydream, the meritocracy of hip-hop as well, his first rap battle, seeing Common as a teen, and this is me and Open Mike Eagle. Enjoy! Hello.
Hi.
You're lucky we made it here. The back room is...
It's very comfortable.
Very cozy. Very comfy. Everyone's so quiet.
Yeah, it got real quiet real fast.
Really quiet. Why did it get so quiet? What's happening?
I think they're all having very important conversations at the same time.
It is an honor to be here at the StubHub flagship event space in Times Square. And... Just, it's really wonderful to have all of you here. He's just been roasting me.
No, it's not true.
He has been roasting me.
I only said
non-stop.
One kind of mean thing.
What did he say? Do you want to tell our close friends and family? I don't know anybody. You're not gonna say?
I don't remember, honestly. It felt like yesterday at this point.
How has your day been?
Chaotic, but that's fine.
What do you mean that's fine?
It's
Why is that fine?
Because I don't live here, and New York is chaotic, so I think every day I have here is a little chaotic.
How do you, when you're touring, how do you get over that chaotic? Like, how do you get back into yourself?
I mean, usually when I'm touring, I just wait till, you know, stage time, and once I press the button on my machine, it makes the first note of one of my songs play, I'm fine. Like, I'm in my element no matter where I am. But, sorry, beer.
Bless you.
Some cities are more intimidating than others, and this one
is... This is a very intimidating city.
Right?
I don't know why I suddenly started screaming that, but I think I'm feeling it from the inside.
Anxiety, yeah. It comes with the territory.
I was telling Mike that walking here, I was walking fast and forgot how to walk, so started flailing because everyone else was doing it. I don't know how you guys walk around. Is everyone local to New York? Oh, so this is embarrassing.
Hence the silence.
Like, get with it, fucking rookie. Anyway, let me introduce you.
Okay.
This is always awkward. You make me so nervous.
I don't know how, though.
I don't know why.
I'm just sitting here existing.
Okay. So,
whoa, you do that every time?
No.
Oh, okay.
Open Mic Eagle. I'm sorry. You were like, this is going to be great. Now you're sitting and you're regretting it all.
I'm having so much fun.
This is Open Mic Eagle.
That's me.
Can we have a clap? Yeah. Thank you. They're alive. He has been one of the funniest rappers in the world. He's Chicago-born, LA-based now. And he is a musician / wrestler / comedian. And I think the most recent album, Brick Body Kids Still Daydream, I feel like that was obviously a look at the projects of Chicago and the proof, you know, of the beauty that can grow out of that and out of trying circumstances. And your EP last year, What Happens When I Try to Relax, which is fucking wonderful.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. it's got this kind of brimming anxiety to it about the technological world that I really want to talk about. And you've also hosted podcasts, and you've also now wrestled, which I mentioned earlier, that we can also talk about. So thank you for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So I think the first place I want to start is the wrestling. I don't know why.
I only did it one time, so there's not that much to talk about.
Well, I saw a video of the Hurricane. Why are you... You know which video I'm talking about? The Hurricane Rana. Who has seen him wrestle?
Probably none of them. Oh, well, Dave was there.
It was unbelievable. It was amazing. I don't know how you did it. And I've watched your Patreon documentary so far. You haven't released it all, I don't think.
Yeah, it's like I put out 4 of the 6 parts. We have 2 more left.
How did that all come about?
Oh, that was a long story. So there's this wrestler guy. He went by Shiloh Jones, and his gimmick was that he was a terrible rapper, and he was actually a terrible rapper. So what he would do before all of his matches is that he would come out in this small building in Louisville, Kentucky that he wrestled in every week, and he would he'd be dressed like somebody trying to make fun of Vanilla Ice, and he would say a terrible rap. And he'd had his 2 buddies behind him hyping it up, and it'd be really bad. And he'd be talking about how he was the best rapper. And then to try to get attention for his character, he started having people shoot video of him doing these things before matches. And he started calling out real rappers and then tagging them in the video on Twitter, hoping that one of them would respond. And I was bored enough. I had nothing going on. Cameron.
Oh, wow.
Vince Staples, I think. Kendrick. I ain't got nothing to do, though. So.
Did you see it, or did somebody from your team see it?
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't have nothing going on, so every time somebody tags me on Twitter, I look at it.
Wait, why don't you have anything going on? I don't understand.
Well, I have some things going on, but not enough going on.
Okay,
I'm ignoring the things that people say to me directly into my telephone on Twitter.
So you answered him,
mm-hmm.
And then it all just happened.
Yeah, I told him it was trashed in a very aggressive manner. Because I was offended to be tagged in his rap trash.
I think that's offensive. Yeah. I totally agree with you.
So it started this thing where we kind of just started going back and forth. And he kept rapping at me on Twitter. Like, he would, like, with his keyboard, he would type raps at me. And I would quote tweet them and again tell them how bad that they were.
Were they really bad? Or were
they
just
horrible? Horrible. It's like, and then he made this video directed at me where he was like walking through the supermarket and like tossing things in his basket while looking at the camera, and like he called me like slimy uncooked chicken or something at some point. Like, that was one of his his big punchline.
I think it's pretty good.
Slime, do you?
I mean, maybe I'm not a rapper.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
I don't know.
I guess it takes all kinds.
So then, how does the world of wrestling intersect with music and comedy? How is it, like a Venn diagram, or more like that Maslow hierarchy of needs? Like, does it in your life?
In my life, yeah, it's definitely a Venn diagram. I've been a wrestling fan since I was a little kid.
You have?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
I love it. The spectacle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot like rap in some ways where, like, you know, you take who you are, you turn up the volume on it, you play a character that's a little bit of an exaggerated version of yourself.
Right,
and
right.
And people either connect to it or they don't, you know?
So that's theatrics,
yes.
Almost. But when you're rapping, do you feel like you have that persona, or is it just an extension of you?
It's an extension of me, but certainly I'm going to say things on records that I'm not going to say in real life. Like, I have more license to, like, say things in different ways, to, like, be more emotional, be more angry, be more sarcastic than it would make sense for me to do in regular life.
Why do you feel like you can be that way when you're with your music and not in regular life? Is it because there's no, like, call and answer? There's no, like, immediacy almost?
Well, it's just because it's a performance at the end of the day, you know? And the thing about rap is implied in the performance is that this person saying these things is me. That's like the lie we all agree on the way in. You know, it's not like watching a movie where, like, if you put on a rap album, you typically don't think of that person as an actor. You know what I mean? You think of them as a person saying how they really feel and think about things. But there is that extra added space for performance where you get to play things up or play things down. And I think in that sense, it is a lot like wrestling. You know what I mean? We're just in terms of the personas.
So was that always natural for you then? So after watching wrestling and then seeing other people rapping around you, was that natural for you then to embody when you were younger, to go naturally into rap?
I think rap was just it's just been the musical language of my entire life. Like just the time space that I was born in, rap was happening everywhere all around me. I feel like if I was born in a different time, I'd have some different way I engage with music. But because of me growing up in the 80s in the South Side, there's just rap was everywhere. It's part of the fabric of the culture around me. And so in some ways, I was always a part of it. It was just a decision of me to actually start doing it.
Why did you start doing it? Is that a weird question?
No, it's not weird, because I didn't do it my whole life.
Yeah.
there was a decision I made one day, and it was partly because of this book I read called Bomb the Suburbs.
Okay.
Hey, got a Bomb the Suburbs fan.
A little louder. Clap. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
This guy's the straw that stirs the drink right here.
That's Elia. He's got an amazing podcast, Tallcast podcast.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. I was getting too casual. Anyway. That's good. Yes.
His book called Bomb the Suburbs was written by a guy named Upski, was his graffiti name. William Wimsatt is his legal name. And he is a guy who came up in hip-hop on the South Side of Chicago, but on the participant side of like the creative arts of hip hop. So he kind of wrote this book. It almost came off like a manual, like how you engage with hip hop. And so one of the things he says early and often in this book is that you can't just like call yourself hip hop. Like it's not a costume. If you're gonna call yourself hip hop, you have to be doing these things. So he challenges you as the reader to like, okay, if you're hip hop, you have to break dance, do graffiti, rap, or DJ. Like
You've got to engage.
Yeah, yes. It's not like a spectator thing. Like,
yes.
You have to be part of it. And I knew where people rapped on the South Side. Like people met specifically to rap and to break and to pass around graffiti books and to practice DJing. And reading that book and seeing that happening, it encouraged me to do it. Mm. You know, and I was trash at first, like everybody is. But, you know, you practice. And that's part of it, too. It's like one of the last real meritocracies that exist. Like, you can get good. And when you get good, people respond to it. And that was one of the things that was really rewarding for me about doing it.
Mm. You know? So that going through that process. So when you practiced, did you do it with everyone around you? Or
me and my buddies, we started rapping together. We went in secret. We went and hid. The first time we rapped, it was in the back of a Kentucky Fried Chicken. On a Tuesday afternoon, there was nobody in there. We went in the back to this empty table. We looked around to make sure nobody could see us or hear us. And we started beating on the table and rapping poorly. It was very bad.
Why did you choose that restaurant?
Because it was empty mostly. We could hide. We could hide. It was great. And we were bad for a while.
Because I feel like the singer-songwriter trope is like very lone. You're alone. You're in your room. You've got your brush in your hand, and like rapping is so. It's like boots on the ground. You say what you mean, even if it doesn't come out right. But you have that camaraderie around you. Did you feel that from the game?
That is the environment we were practicing for.
But
me and my buddies, we were all starting together, and we didn't want to be awful in front of everybody.
Yes.
So we would practice in secret. We would get on the phone and do three-way because it was old school where you could just call people on three-way.
Landlines. Give it up for the landlines.
Yeah, we were all on phones connected to walls, and we would dial people in, and we would all just rap. We would just take turns rapping, again, very badly. But we were getting ready to rap in front of people.
What did you love about those beginning stages, that discovery adventure?
I think it was just exciting to just start and figure it out, to go from not knowing how to do this thing that we admired a lot to like slowly figuring out and slowly like getting better, you know, like kind of charting these stages of like oh, now I know if I just think of rhyming words all the time, like I started keeping this notebook, which is like, I would think of a word and just think of a bunch of words to rhyme with and just write them all down.
Yeah.
Right? And so then that became something that I could catalog in my mind and always go back to. Like, I would have this kind of trove of words to choose from. You know, and there's different little technical things that you start to realize, too, as you get better. But
like what?
Like a crutch. So we're talking about freestyle rapping,
yes.
Right? So we're talking about, because when I started rapping, it wasn't to write songs. It was literally to go into the cipher, which is people standing in a circle and have the confidence to get in the middle of that circle and say, now it's my turn. I'm going to start rapping.
I'm here, yeah.
And there's like somebody beatboxing or something to keep the beat, and everybody's going for it. And if you're terrible, you will be shut down quickly. And there's battles. Like, there's all, it's like a, it's a very volatile environment. But we started rapping to prepare to do it that way. So, like, we realized early on that part of what we would do mentally to try to get to the next bar, because we'd think of a bar and you try to give yourself time to think of the next thing, you develop something called a crutch.
Yes.
Right? So, like, your crutch might be, when I come through, you know what I mean?
Yes. So the things
we're
you're
here
going
at
back
StubHub.
To.
When I come through, I rap in the tub. You know what I mean? Like, but you would say that to give yourself the time,
great.
You know, but everybody kind of had a different one, you know, because there's no manual. People are just trying to fucking figure it out.
But aren't those crutches so wonderful because you created them? It's not like you went and was sitting in a school writing these things down.
Right.
They came from you. So they are crutches, but they're also akin to if a writer is writing and using words that jump out on the page.
Right, but it's if they wrote the same word in every sentence.
Every
you know what I mean? Like,
so how did you get over that not looking at those crutches in a way that held you back?
Well, you have to realize you're doing that, which we would do for each other. We'd point out and be like, hey, you're leaning on that one thing.
Tub again.
Right. And once you realize you're doing it, then you can start trying to counteract it. You can start trying to think of something a little faster. You could even leave silence there to try to figure something out. You can say the thing that you're going to rhyme with earlier. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be on the metronome. Like, you just find different ways to work around not knowing exactly what to say on time.
Was it thrilling when you started figuring more and more of yourself in that context? Because as we grow, you know, those are like formative years when we're in high school, when we're younger. So as you're growing older and you're figuring out not only what you're good at, but also who you are.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really magical, like, it's a tiny, like, space and time. How was that?
It was great. And it's going back to what I was saying about it being a meritocracy. Like, you know, you can be in high school kind of just drowning and figuring out how to be like a social human being. And there's all
yes.
these factors that you can't control that lean into that. Like, you know, there's high school politics. There's like whether or not you have money or don't. Like all these things that you can't really control. But you can control how good you are at something. And this,
yeah.
these hip-hop arts came with this social component where, like, if you were good at the thing, you were respected, like, no questions asked. Like, regardless if your socks and your shoes were bad, you know what I mean? Or if you had holes
so
in your pants.
So it kind of overtook
like,
whatever
exactly.
external. But
absolutely.
Then did you then start believing in yourself more and
absolutely.
Having that physicality?
Because you would get the reward you were looking for from the world at you being good at the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was the first rapper then that you ever saw live? Or first
at a show?
Yeah.
The first concert
well, not
I went
at
to.
A show. It doesn't have to be.
Well, I think that probably would be the same answer, though. Well, because I used to see people rap in ciphers, but for the most part, they weren't people who had music. They weren't like artists. They
right.
were rappers. Like we were, you know, we were the same guys that would go do graffiti on a bus. We'd be rapping. Like it wasn't like people that had careers. The first rapper with a music career that I saw was Common Sense, when he was still Common Sense.
Yes.
It was him in Chicago. It had to be in like 96. It was Mos Def was opening for him. Quali was opening for him. All Natural, which is this local group from Chicago, was opening up for him. And this group, Mood, that was from Cincinnati, I believe. It was a fucking incredible show.
I can imagine.
Awesomest thing happened at that show. Mos Def was late for his set. We were all very fucking disappointed at Mos Def being late for his set. But
how late?
He basically missed his set.
Okay.
But
so Okay.
But he came out right before Common Sense with a bag, with a McDonald's bag and a cup. And he just freestyled for like 5 minutes about how he was late because he had to eat. And it was the fucking awesomest thing any of us had ever saw.
I can imagine. Yeah. There's so much humanness in that.
Yeah.
As well,
because it's like, oh, we get it.
Because, but you also don't feel like a human when you're watching these idols. Mm-hmm. That's why live music is so fascinating, because you get put into this weird, you put yourself into this weird box. Mm. And then when somebody comes on and shows you that inside fleshy rawness.
Yeah, they let the veil down. They do something unexpected that's live in the moment, that's just for the people who are there.
Yes.
Like, nobody who wasn't in that room, like, there wasn't an internet then, so nobody would ever hear about that moment. It was just for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
So after that, did you know that that was something that you wanted to do? Was that the, was that just an add-on extra thing that made you want to pursue it, or?
It made me want to go harder in what I was already doing, which was rapping and breakdancing and all of that. I still did not want to, like, do songs yet. That just wasn't the hip-hop that I was engaged in. Like, I consumed all of that music, but I still felt like the career in music and hip-hop was, like, far away. It was like some other people did, you know. And
that's interesting.
As people like Mos Def and Quali, as we started hearing their music, we feel, oh, like, these are people who are like us, who,
yes,
who are here in New York. Well, we're in Chicago and we're hearing them, and we can tell by the way they're rapping, like, oh, they probably rap like we do, and they're making songs, and it's kind of, oh, this is different now. Like, oh, maybe there is something. But we weren't writing raps. We never did that. We only freestyled. So it was a long time before I ever wrote a song.
So that was in 96.
Mm-hmm.
What did you, because also there's the whole performative aspect of it as well. So how did you get comfortable in that realm? What do you remember your first ever performance?
Well, I would count these, you know, we would get in ciphers, and ciphers would quickly turn into battles. And battles were all about performance. So you're not performing a song, but you are, like, doing things with physicality to give emphasis to these lyrics, because you're trying to stop another person from rapping. You're trying
yes,
to be so good at it that they feel like overwhelmed.
That's very, really fascinating, because
yeah,
I also think that that's only, it isn't a thing that is in a lot of other genres, that you have to almost bring your body to a place,
yes,
that stops the other person.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
As short of physicality, absolutely. That's why a lot of,
yeah,
battles end up turning into fights, because physically that energy is, like, already there.
Yes.
You know?
So when you performed, do you remember that time? Do you remember where it was?
In the same place where we used to meet to practice freestyling is where the battles would pop off. And one time it was like an organized battle where, like, it was like a 16-person tournament. And, you know, you rap against this person. If you win, you go on to the next.
Okay.
If you win, you go on
it's
to
like
the next.
Like a gauntlet.
Right.
Gauntlet,
and so
rap, yes,
that was like the first battle that I won was in that place.
Okay.
And, like, I mean, I'll always remember that, just for, like, the giant boon in self-esteem that came from that.
Yes.
You know?
Do you need that?
Absolutely. Every
okay,
day. I wish,
yeah,
there was a battle I could get in right now.
I mean, that's what I've arranged everywhere.
Oh, good. All right.
Pause the podcast.
Pause the podcast.
It's that time of year to start thinking about making a list and checking it twice. A list of live event tickets, that is.
And whether it's a sold-out basketball game or your favorite band stadium tour, there's no better way to celebrate the season than grabbing tickets on StubHub for you and your family and your friends.
Need gifts for your sister who loves metal, your coworker who's a hockey mega fan, and your Broadway-addicted dad? StubHub is your one-stop shop for gifts that will thrill everyone on your list.
Better yet, grab an extra ticket for yourself and share some quality time with friends and loved ones over the holidays.
StubHub allows you to get more live than anywhere else. With the widest range of events and over 10 million tickets worldwide, StubHub also has the best selection of tickets. Sometimes you want front row, sometimes you want balcony. Whatever the case, StubHub will help you find what you're looking for.
So, head to StubHub.com, StubHub.com, or their user-friendly app today to find the best selection of tickets to any event. StubHub. Be there. So, talking about landlines, but technology and unplugging, there's a lot that happens on What Happens When I Try to Relax.
Mm-hmm.
you talk about ghosting and this overbearing abundance of things and stimulus around you. Is there a world where you see yourself unplugging at some, like, how affected are you? I do not want to ask the question of what is your relationship to the internet and technology, but I kind of am quite fascinated considering it is so important for an artist like you.
I don't usually think of unplugging completely, because I am a technology addict in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And I get anxious. Like, when I'm on, like, a flight to the UK and it doesn't have Wi-Fi, I feel, like, sick. Like,
seriously?
I feel like...
disconnected.
I feel like when I land, the entire world's going to be different. And I'm not going to shit about it. Like,
how do you go to sleep every night?
Well, I mean, just, you know, it's hard to sleep on those flights, but I take edibles, so I'm usually fine. Yeah. Oh, there's an organic clap.
God, I thought you guys fell asleep. I mean, come on. Yeah. No, but I do, that definitely resonates. But then how do you make sure that you aren't anxious when you are totally plugged in?
I just try to be extra aware of what content, like which pieces of content affect me in what ways. You know, like my relationship with Instagram, for instance.
Yes, how's that?
It's just mostly negative. It's just mostly, like, my relationship with it is negative. Like, I don't necessarily want to see what people are doing when I'm not where they are. Like, I just kind of, like, there's something about that that kind of bothers me. Like, I don't, because before I looked at the photos, I didn't care. And that was, like, a lot more comfortable of a space for me to be in. So I start scrolling. I'm like, why am I not at that thing? Well, I didn't want to be at the thing. So, you know, so I end up having to take breaks from specific platforms. Like,
that's,
you know,
smart.
Sometimes Instagram's a little too much. Sometimes Twitter's just, like, a little too negative or, you know. So I kind of just bounce around and I'll just go hide on Tumblr sometimes or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's there's just different ways to engage with, you know, all the humans on the internet. So I try to be aware of that, too.
When you're doing concept albums like that, well, not concept, but have a through line idea for your albums, just like Brick Body Kids Still Daydream, do you need to get into that idea of it before it happens, before you start writing? Or does it just manifest as you are, you know, creating the record?
Well, what tends to happen with me when I'm writing, you know, whether what I'm making is a full concept album or not, there's usually some, like, thesis statement. There's some thing I'm trying to say. And a lot of times when I'm in the middle of making an album, like, I don't realize exactly what that thing is till I'm halfway through.
Really?
And I start to see, like, oh, I keep mentioning a thing. Like, I'm circling something. And then once I'm able to, like, fully form what that sentence is, that's usually how I'm able to kind of, like, round things out and go from there. But it's like a combination of, like...
Right.
There are certain things I want to say, and there are certain things that are just coming out. I'm trying to figure out, like, what the link between all of that is.
Do you feel like, because obviously I'd love to talk to you about the roster of rappers that you had collaborated with on your show with Baron Vaughn. How did you connect with him? How did that all come about? Because I also think that's fascinating, because it links to, obviously, your process. And, like, when you're trying to bring it to TV... you can't really go, oh, well, I'm halfway through and now I figured out what it is. So how did you approach that side?
I mean, that was a completely different approach, because I know I'm writing rap songs for a Comedy Central, you know, television show. So I'm whereas in my albums or my projects, sometimes things are outright said to be humorous, and sometimes that stuff just kind of comes up, and, you know, a song can feel a few different ways. When it came to that, I'm like, I know I need to go, like, comedy first. So it did it changed the direction, you know, or at least, like, I adjusted the levers so that, like, definitely go harder with the comedy. Like, make sure every line, or try to make sure every line is
was that affected by the people you were working with, or was that just really something that felt comfortable for you at the time?
It felt comfortable for me at the time, but even with that, though, like, there's still a couple songs on there that aren't laugh out loud funny, because every episode we dealt with a topic, and it wasn't always easy to find the funny in some of those. Like, we have an episode about, like, you know, like, black people's relationship with the police. And there wasn't a lot of jokes to be
really
found.
No, it's really real. Right.
You know, we did our best to try to come funny first, but it wasn't always easy.
But you did such a good job, like, with the Danny Brown. But that was, it was not only so well written, but also really well shot. And everything around it was so brilliant. I don't know if you want to describe, can you explain a little bit about
it? So that song's called Unfiltered. You guys familiar with Danny Brown? Anybody familiar with Danny Brown? Okay. So Danny Brown is a personality who's a lot, you know, bigger than mine. And the way that we thought we collaborate for the show is we set up this scenario where, like, I'm an office worker and a button up and a bad afro. And there's just all sorts of things happening in the office around me that are annoying or frustrating. And I'm not the type of person who is going to speak up and confront people about them. So this thing happens, that thing happens, this thing happens. And I get worked up. And then Danny Brown's head pops out of my neck. And then he takes over my body as my id. And then he starts rapping what I want to say at these people in the office.
I really wish, like, suddenly I just had a screen come down and allowed you all to watch
it. It's in your phone, though. It's there.
Your phone.
It's already there.
Do not watch
Go
it
to
right
YouTube.com. It is there.
It's great. And it also, I think, it kind of takes both angles that you were talking about. So it takes the side of you really want to make a comment about society and yourself, mm-hmm. but do it in a really tasteful way that can, if people want to laugh at it and never think about it again, they can. But then it's also, you know, blurred the line between maybe it can make a little bit of a statement
right.
as well.
Yeah, everything we did at its core is making some sort of statement. But like I was saying, we definitely tried to approach it in a way that was more humorous.
Is that just for the TV show or do you do that with your
just
music?
Just for the TV show. Like, I don't want to be funny on purpose in my albums, like, as an edict. Like, if something it occurs to me to be said in a funny way, I love having the license to go for it that way. But also, I like to say dark shit, and I like to, you know, have music that has a range of feelings in it. So in my stuff, it tends to run the whole gamut.
So talking about comedy, do you have a comedian that you look up to and or someone who you just found so inspiring, someone that really just embodied everything that you saw, you know, maybe commented on the world in a way that you wanted to?
I mean, it'd be a combination of people. I think Dick Gregory was really big for me because he was a person who was trying to say a lot about society, but also be, like, hysterically funny in how he did it. And it wasn't ever my aim to be specifically funny, but I always wanted to be entertaining. And he found a great way to do that. Somebody like George Carlin, same thing, like, really thought-provoking, like, really coming from a place of, like, observing the human condition, having some very serious things to say, but wanting to put it in front of you in a way that, like, could make you laugh and kind of disarm you.
Why do comedians always want to be musicians and musicians always want to be comedians?
Well, comics just think...
Well, I mean, was that your experience? I don't know.
My experience is that comedians think music is cooler than comedy, so they always want to be around musicians.
They always want
musicians to be part of their show, and then musicians always want to have entertaining things to say between the songs because they say the same shit over and over again every night.
The banter.
Yes, the banter. So the banter, we look to comedians to be inspired to have better banter.
So what are the different value systems of rap? So, like, obviously I've seen, like, punchline rap used as a pejorative, but, like, how, as opposed to other styles, how does that fit in? Where do you fit into that?
Yeah, I started out as a punchline rapper. When you're freestyling, the way I was freestyling in Chicago, it was all about coming up with the punchline that was going to make people laugh or make people react. You know, so that's always going to be a part of my writing because I realized the value of that early on.
So was that your way into comedy?
I think
you
that's
started like that.
If
that
we
way?
Talk about the Venn diagram, I think that is the connective tissue is that, you know, if I look at how a comedian sees the world and I look at how I see the world, I think that's the connective tissue. We're both looking for the punchline, you know.
How did you create that kind of cadence and that wordplay? How did you...
I was borrowing it from the people who I was watching rap. Like, the whole style of freestyling at that point was like, I know what I want to say, so let me think of the line to set it up so I can deliver my punchline and hope it hits.
to talk about your relationship with your community and the in your fans, and then your relationship with obviously technology. But so your Patreon, I feel as a member, what do you call Patreon-y?
Sure,
is that what
that
I
works?
I feel like it's such a beautiful community of kind of insiders, and you've got live videos and demos and secret podcasts that we can talk about if you'd like to make it not so secret. Was that, did you ever see that sort of community as a part of the future of music? Do you see that as the way that you envision everything going?
I do think that there's, you know, more and more we're going to get to a space where if you're an independent musician, you're going to be looking for different ways to engage with your fans and different ways to, like, create revenue streams because, you know, more and more going forward, the industry is not going to a revenue model that scales well to independence. You know, when you still sold $10 a unit, you know, that scaled well. So if you sold 1 million or if you sold 10,000, if you were getting that whole $10, it was a good year, you know?
Yes.
But now with streaming and how everything is kind of like these microtransactions and, you know, these pennies that are split up per stream, that doesn't scale well to the independent artists as it does for the big ones. So I think, you know, more and more independent artists are going to have to find ways to, you know, eat. And
other
if they've built
just,
a fan base that will that will engage with them that way, then it's valuable, I think, to offer those sorts of opportunities.
But yours has kind of been, it's felt so natural. It's felt like something that everyone should have been doing from the start. Because even seeing, I don't know if everybody's seen those Spotify, like 2019 thingies that kind of show you who you are, but it's a bot. go buy music, you know, buy music. How do you feel about that? Considering how you do have a Patreon, how you are aware that the that things are filtered in a very scattered way. How do you feel?
I mean, it's, you know, it's good to have that feedback. Like, that's part of the trade-off, you know, with the technology, with the fact that music is accessible to everybody as consumers, and you're paying $10 a month to a Spotify and Apple Music or whatever. Like, you trade that revenue, but you get back this feedback. You get back this data, like, you couldn't, as an individual artist, have that type of information before.
Are you talking about Patreon or are you talking about Spotify?
I'm talking about Spotify. Okay. I'm talking about, you know, like these year-end kind of reports that let people know how many hundreds or thousands of hours they listen to you. It's it's weird as shit, but it's good information.
Did you do it?
Did I do it?
Did you do the wrap-up?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Who was your...
My artist of the decade and the year was They Might Be Giants.
Really?
Yes.
I had John on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Which John? Linnell?
Or?
Oh, damn. That's awesome.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah,
I'm not even remotely surprised.
Yeah. Decade and year. Those are my guys. It was them and MF Doom and Tribe Called Quest and Wu-Tang and everybody else you would guess.
So how do you then make sure that independent artists aren't standing on this pedestal? I obviously I do want to tread lightly here because I don't think that every independent artist has to be this representative either for the, you know, the voice of the
movement. Yeah, I mean, we just all have our perspective, so, you know, I don't mind sharing mine.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. So how do you then foresee everything going from this point? What do you want other artists to do in order to make sure that they're not going crazy touring the world, you know, or trying to sell merch and giving a bit of the money away to the venue, or, you know, how do you make sure that people are being as honest? Because not everyone can have a Patreon.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
You are deservedly, you have this amazing fan base for a reason.
Yeah, and you know, the reason it kind of works for me is because I have dabbled in different things. Like, I have some, you know, things I've done in comedy or in wrestling or whatever. Like, I have different types of content. Like, not everything I do is made to be streamed on Spotify. You know what I mean? So that makes it where, oh, I can have a home for other stuff. You know, podcasts or whatever. And I think that, you know, if you look at Danny Brown, if you look at Killer Mike, like, if you look at what independent artists are doing right now, they're finding ways to, you know, to differentiate, you know, to find out how to engage the other parts of their personality that maybe you don't just get from the music. Like, a lot of times these are just fucking interesting people, and the more ways they can put that on display is more possibility for them to make more headway into pop culture and have more different different kinds of products and not just what you can upload to Spotify or Apple Music.
Isn't there a lot of pressure with that then? Because what if somebody just wants to perform? Is that not a possibility anymore?
I think it is a possibility. I think that it's going to be more and more difficult to do that without the backing of a giant corporation.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be harder and harder to do. Not impossible, and you certainly can. I just think it's difficult. I've seen it where some people are choosing to treat their products with more value. So they're not putting it on Spotify. They're not putting it on Apple. Like, they're saying, you have to come get it for me and you have to spend $100. And you know what I mean? Like, because
take
that's
it from my cold, dead hands. Yeah.
Yeah, and because that's their way of engaging the market. The market's not really respecting them. So they're trying to find different ways to do it, which I think is another avenue. This is not the avenue that I prefer.
So you don't feel overwhelmed that you're having to do all these things. It's actually something that's tapping into all your different skill sets.
The thing about me is that when I got into music, the money was gone already. Like, by the time I sat at the table, there was no more food at the table. So, like, I'm happy that there's finally other shit you can do. Because I was just making music, and it was like, this is cool, but y'all used to make lots of money doing this. And, you know, it's not like that no more. So I'm happy that there's other things that I can now do to be creative and try to make a fucking living from it.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the podcast that you were doing a wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
But now, is there a new one coming out?
Yeah, I have some big podcast plans for next year, and I can't necessarily like announce them all yet, but
you can tell us a little bit.
Well, one of them's going to be one like this where I talk to interesting people.
One is actually going to be us together.
Yes, it is. Well, you heard it here first. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to be interviewing people. I won't have this beautiful studio audience to entertain.
What is the theme?
Well,
what is the thesis?
I'm not sure it is one in that one. It's actually, it's me bringing back this podcast I used to do called Secret Skin. Mm-hmm. That I've had Hannibal Buress on, Marc Maron on, you know, and it's just people who I come across who I have a relationship with that I find interesting, and it's me just interviewing them on the shit that I think is interesting about them.
Have you started it yet, or is it just launching?
I'm going to be relaunching it next year, along with a couple other things.
Okay, so we'll just find out.
You have to know me already on Twitter, probably, yes. And then I'll let you know when things are ready.
Wonderful.
When is this coming out?
Yeah,
see? So what's the point? Like,
I don't know. You're actually my 80th episode.
80?
Which I feel like...
Damn!
Thank you.
Octogenarian podcast.
I feel like an old lady with a Zimmer frame, like, it's my 80th party. But, I'm sorry. I don't know who
that
was.
You're going to make a great old lady.
I don't know who that was. I want to circle back around before we get to the crowd questions. Are we doing for time? Very good. In terms of the wrestling thing, so that documentary was directed by...
Lance Bangs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if anyone doesn't know who that is...
Oh, man. He's a legend with music video directing, TV stuff. He did Jackass. Like, man, his list of credentials is a damn mile long, man. He's been... In and around TV, film, music videos forever.
So what was your fascination with wrestling to begin with?
Like I said, you know, the over-the-top personality is a big thing. And I think just the way that they execute theater without a safety net in front of people and shit either goes well or it don't. I just always been really fascinated by it.
Did you have a favorite wrestler?
I have like 7 or 8.
Well, I mean, list them all.
Okay. Macho Man, Randy Savage, Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, The Rock, Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Ric Flair, Bret Hart. You know, like, so Bret Hart was really good.
I was really into wrestling when I was younger.
Okay.
The Super Slam came to, because of my brother, they came to South Africa in 96, and Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestled Yokozuna and pooped in his pants.
What?
I was
following you until that last part.
I wasn't expecting to tell this story, and then it came out.
Okay. That, I guess that came out.
Yeah,
okay.
Literally.
Anyway, I was going to do a thing.
Where do I go now?
Yeah.
So Brett the Hitman, was that his name?
That was him. Did he poop too? Oh, okay, just checking.
Is that a thing? I wanted to maybe ask, is that a thing that wrestlers do?
They definitely poop.
Did you?
They usually just don't do it in front of people.
Did you poop?
No, I mean, I pooped that day.
Okay.
Yeah, no. That would have been a terrible documentary if that happened. There were lots of cameras. That would have been bad.
I haven't seen the end of it, so I don't know what happens.
No, that's not what happened.
Real shit show. There was...
That's great.
That's all I've got. I'm sorry. Should we do some fan questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, I also... Just a precursor to this is that your fans are the most... fucking great bunch of people. I had pages of questions coming
That's
in.
That's too many.
No, but I don't... Either you are communicating with these people all the time that they want to know more, because they were really detailed questions. Some of them really funny. But let me ask the first one.
All right.
Oh, this is a very easy one. When is the next album coming?
When it's done. And when it's done plus however long it takes for fucking vinyl to manufacture. So when it's done plus 3 to 5 months.
Have you recorded? Thank you. Have you recorded?
I'm in the middle of working on it now.
That's really good news.
Yeah.
Can you tell us anything about it?
Not at all.
What is... I thought this was going to be scoops time. No?
No scoops here.
Okay, so just new music and that's all. And there's a vinyl. Okay. Sorry to Ryuk. He asked the question. So I like this one from a fan of yours called Giovanni.
Okay.
How do I cope with an existential crisis? How do I find meaning to the things that I do?
The fuck is he asking me for?
Is Giovanni here?
What? That sounds like he needs to read many books that I did not write.
I kind of loved it because he felt comfortable enough to ask it and then also maybe hope that I was stupid enough to do it for him. I promise you that wasn't one of mine. But
I believe you.
I do like it because that is the term crisis is kind of a big deal for people right now.
Mm.
So when maybe let's phrase it. How do you find meanings in the things that you do?
I just think everything has meaning, and I don't mind if the meaning is small. I still think it can be important. Like, one of my favorite songs I ever wrote is literally about me washing the dishes, because I find a lot of meaning in that. And I don't mind if other people don't see it. If I do, then I'll honor that.
That's a really good answer. But it's also unusual, right? Because people always find meaning in things that are... They want things like greater than just casual, normal things like doing the dishes. But that's really, it's almost quite romantic.
Okay.
So this is from Professor Turtle. Do you?
We've met Professor Turtle. Yeah.
You have?
Yeah, we met Professor Turtle.
But he did say Prof Turtle. So I've done him a disservice by trying to say his full name. I'm so sorry.
He'll love any mention of him,
so he
regardless
asked,
of whether or not it's all
well,
the syllables.
He asked great questions. He asked two questions. Is there a single book and or film that you wish everyone would be impacted by?
Book and or is it,
film.
Or film?
Film.
Ooh, single one.
I know you mentioned a book earlier, but if there's another one that...
A film. I Am Not Your Negro. I think it's a James Baldwin documentary that I think everybody could benefit from seeing.
When did you see it?
I saw it for the first time, I think, 2 years ago. James Baldwin is a person who said a lot in his time that was really impactful, but a lot of where he was aiming and observing from will bear fruit forever and ever and ever and ever.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for that recommendation. What would you do to improve our public education system?
Critical thinking. Teach critical thinking. Encourage media literacy so people aren't lied to as easily as they are now.
Were you lied to?
Yes, aggressively, yes.
How do you think that will shift things? Why is that so important?
I think that a lot of how pop culture happens right now, and that's everything from entertainment to really important shit in politics, is... people manipulating facts to engender particular emotional reactions for people that they take advantage of. And I think that if if we raise a generation of people who are taught or given the tools of critical thinking earlier, that it just makes that a lot harder to do.
Yes, and also enforcing those tools from a young age can absolutely make that change. I believe in that. Which member of the Wu-Tang Clan would make the best pro wrestler?
Definitely Method Man. He's the tallest.
Yeah. Thank you, Noelle, for your question. Mm-hmm. She's this invisible person. And lastly, in your opinion, what is the hardest part of being an indie rapper as opposed to, say, an indie rock band or folk artist?
Well, I think I probably have it easier because they sound like they have to split their money with other people.
You keeping it all for yourself?
Okay. Well, I'd give Dave a little.
Saying, hi, Dave. But do you find yourself in those positions, in that position where you're feeling like, wow, I really do, I'm doing what is authentic to me. I'm making the kind of music I want to make. I'm, you know, involved in projects that are fulfilling you, as opposed to you going down another route.
I feel like that's the benefit of being independent, is that you don't have to answer to a bunch of people. Like, you know, when you are assigned to a major label, more often than not, you know, these people have these like quarterly earnings expectations that if your album doesn't hit this mark, like people in the office are fucking losing their jobs and shit. Like it's a lot of pressure for an artist. And in that position, you understand why they're not able to make all of the creative choices that they want to make, because it's not just about them. I want it to be about me. So that's why I'm more comfortable being independent. You know, I don't want to have to explain why my song about dishes. I don't want to have to convince people that it's important to anybody other than me. You know, and the people who ride with me on that, cool. And then some people who don't want to ride with that, and that's cool too.
How does independence and freedom then, how do those two things coincide for you?
Oh, I mean, like independence business-wise?
Yeah.
Well, I just think, you know, literally it means, the independence means that I have the creative freedom to make every choice that I want to make.
Do you feel like you have enough resources to do that as
never,
well?
Never, ever, never, ever.
What do you
but
need?
That's the trade-off.
What
money,
do you need?
I need
We're
lots of money. I need barrels and barrels of cash.
Great.
Is what I need.
On that note, I'm going to take out the soundbite of you saying I need barrels of
Please
cash.
Please do. It's the truth.
That is all I think I have to ask.
Okay.
But thank you. I don't know
thank
why
you.
I paused. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having
you
me.
You have been a very, very wonderful guest.
Number 80. Put it in the books.
It's in. And so, yeah, that's unfortunately the end of tonight. But a very heartfelt thank you, obviously, to Open Mic Eagle.
Thank you, guys.
And as well as StubHub team for hosting us and giving us delicious food. And also to the Consequence of Sound team that are here. And obviously to you all for sitting through this. Thank you so much. It's been a treat.
Thank you.
This Must Be The Gig is produced by Adam Kibble, and we'd like to thank Billy Yost and The Kickback for our theme song, Rube, and buy their music at thekickbackband.com, Daniel Brater and Dean Berger for the additional sound design, and the Consequence Podcast Network, where you'll find a bunch of other amazing shows. If you've listened this far, why not go the extra mile and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts? Your comments provide valuable feedback for us, and it helps other people find us too. For information on new episodes, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at TMBTGpod, and generally just irritate everyone you know about the show. Thanks again, and I miss you already.
During the holiday season, everyone's trying to get you to buy more stuff. Instead, head to StubHub so you can celebrate the season at a game or show. Take the whole family to the ballet, bang on the glass at a hockey game, or sing along with your favorite artist at a concert. Hey, we definitely count that as caroling. StubHub has the best selection of seats for all the holiday events you want to experience with your loved ones. And every ticket is 100% guaranteed. Get to StubHub.com or their user-friendly app today. StubHub, S-T-U-B-H-U-B, be there.
Consequence Podcast Network.